should I leave? He said, okay, all right. So you all right? You good? So which one are we using? The handheld, not this one? Okay, so I'll just stand here with this on my ear and we're good. All right, no problem. No problem. So anyway, so I work with organizations all over the country to help them develop leadership and team and people. And this probably sounds cheesy to some people. We're in church, so hardly anything sounds cheesy in church. But anyway, to the people in corporate world, it probably does. And I don't mean it to sound that way, but I truly want to help people live better lives. And what I have learned is that better people make better organizations. Better people make better churches. Better people make better marriages. That's not real popular, but anyway. But better people make everything better. And so that's what I love doing, and I do it in a variety of different ways, like a lot of different avenues and messages and blah, blah. So I don't know. I sent a description of, and I don't know if it's in your bulletin or what, but anyway, the little phrase I came up with to describe what it is I do is I help people navigate through the complexities of human weirdness. How many of you know anybody that's weird? Let me see you raise your hand. Anybody that's weird? Yeah. How many of you don't know for sure, but you probably are sitting next to somebody that's kind of weird? Let me see you raise your hand. If you're not completely sure, I will tell you that you are, and that should solve that. How many of you are married to somebody that's kind of weird? Let me see you raise your hand. Okay, good. Yeah, most guys don't touch that. They just go, nah, not going there. Whether she's here or not, she's got eyes. It doesn't make any difference. How many of your spouses are married to somebody that's kind of weird? Let me see you raise your hand. Okay, so here's the deal. If you're married and did not just now raise your hand, you're either a liar or in denial, because the truth is, every single one of us are weird to some extent. And if the word weird bothers you, first, I'm sorry. Second, substitute that with, you know, special or unique. So I just don't know if there's anybody that's weird. I think they're just special. Okay, then whatever. But weird. And so now comes, because how many of you work with every day of your life? Not on, there's no weird people here, but I mean, Monday through Friday, you work with weird people. Let me see you raise your hand. Yeah, okay. So every one of you do. You go to school with weird people. The kids in the room that still live at home have weird parents. And the parents in the room that have kids at home have freaky weird kids. And it's just, human weirdness is here to stay. It's not going away. And I don't know if this encourages or discourages you, but God actually created it. Isn't that weird? That's even weird. So how do you deal with it now? How do you navigate through it? And the term intentionally says navigate through human weirdness, not fix human weirdness, because you're not ever going to fix human weirdness. Ladies, you're not ever going to fix human weirdness. Somebody gave you a list a long time ago. They said, don't marry that boy. You said, why? And they gave you four pages of reasons. And you said, don't worry about that. I'm going to... How's that turning out for you? Pretty good? You just... Probably not. Because you're not going to fix human weirdness. You're going to have to learn to navigate through human weirdness. This is an issue. Now, people come to me all the time and in sessions that I'm doing wherever I am, and here's a common question. I'm not going to tell you they ask it exactly like this, but somewhere in their very diplomatic and politically correct way, they usually say, but how do you deal with somebody who is so, and fill in the blank with whatever their issue is? How do you deal with somebody who's, whatever your pet peeve is, right? Everybody in this room's got a pet peeve and go, yeah, you know, I can tolerate people from here to there and I can do this, whatever. But when it comes to, nah, I don't know, I just don't. How do you deal with that? So weird people's one thing, but like super weird people, it's a whole other thing. Weird people are one thing, but when people do this, and in the church world, this is an issue. This is an issue. Because every single one of you deal with people who think differently about life and politics and Jesus and God and church than you do. So how do you now deal with that? How do you walk through that? How do you navigate that to still do what it is that I believe God wants you to do? And that's just, you know, kind of be Him to people around you. How do you do that? in an everyday work context. So the only answer I have, and I'm not telling you this because we're in church, I'm telling you this because this is what I talk about even in corporate America, all over the country, is I just don't think you can really do that with first understanding and practicing and applying grace. Wow. I just don't think, I don't think Deb's here. Is she here? My wife. Is she not here? Okay, all right. Anyways. I just don't think you can do it without understanding, practicing, and applying grace. Now, this is where it gets really tough because grace is very, very messy. It's very blurry. It's very muddy. It doesn't make sense. It's not fun. It's counterintuitive. What's interesting about grace is that we, all of us in this room, want grace, but we in no way, shape, form, or fashion want to apply and practice grace with the people around us. I'll practice grace with these people, but you don't understand what they did. Really? And we really want to go down that road? There is a story in the Bible that illustrates this, I think, just about better than anything else. And I'm going to share with you what I believe to be two of the most powerful words in the entire Bible. Everybody in this room, if you've been in church at all, you know the story, you know the guy I'm going to talk about. Some of you, if I said, who's your biblical hero, you'd name this guy. But what he did and who he was before was appalling, was sick, would make us mad. Now, here's the thing. Before you jump to, I was born and raised in church. You know, I'm fourth generation Christian. Actually, I'm fourth generation Pentecostal. Do you know what that means? Woo, that don't mean you're Christian. That means you're Christian. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like, and you grew up in a Pentecostal church, man, you are like double saved. That's like, you have to be because you backslide during the week and then you got to get saved again. You know what I mean? Again and again. I mean, if you don't know what Pentecostal is, then just, well, don't YouTube it. That'd be dangerous. But I'm telling you, man. So, I mean, I've been there, done that. And here's what I've learned in all my years of church. I was born on a Monday. If I'd been born on a Wednesday or Sunday, I guarantee I'd probably been born in church because if the doors were open, we were there. That's the kind of, how many of you grew up in a church like that? Or family like that? Yeah, it's like, so here's what grace was something we sang about. It was something we heard about. It was something that we were led to believe that that's how we're saved by grace. All these kinds of things. We even said that before we ate dinner. And all these things that we learned about grace. But I don't ever remember hearing about grace the way I have come to know grace in the last 15 to 20 years of my life. And the way I have come to know grace in the last 15 to 20 years of my life and how what an incredible practical application it has to everyday Monday through Friday life. When you're around people that don't know Jesus and you're around people in the workplace constantly, you're around people at school and students and teachers and all these other people. Grace was not designed just for the Christian. It was designed for every human being that walks planet Earth. And I don't think until we fully understand it and practice and apply it will we ever fully get what it is when Jesus said, love God, love people. How do you do that? You can only do that when you begin to understand, practice, and apply grace. All right, there's a story in Acts. Acts, if you're here and for whatever reason you don't know, Acts is the account of how the church started and Luke wrote it and based on all his, you know, ideas and his observations and that kind of thing. And there's a guy named Saul. Saul was a guy who was he didn't really like the church much, and so he spent his time persecuting the church and arresting people and sometimes killing people, and he was not a good guy at all. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to think of a person in your life that would be your Saul, a person in your life that not. Let's put it on a scale of 1 to 10, okay? So everybody, you have some 8s, 9s, 10s in your life, and they're the people you love. They love you. You get along with them. You get them, and everything's cool with 8s, 9s, and 10s. And then you got 4s through 7s. You got those people you go, well, I don't know for sure. I mean, they're okay, but sometimes they bug me, and I just don't get them. But then you got 1s, 2s, and 3s. And these are the people that people come to me and say, well, what do you do if you just don't like somebody? And the first thing I tell you is the first thing I tell you, if you're a Jesus follower, Jesus never gave you the right or permission to not like somebody. And the second thing I'd tell you, that's third grade language, third grade mentality, you need to grow up. But that's a whole nother conversation. These 1, 2s, and 3s, what happens to that person? They just rub you the wrong way. And this is what they've done, and they've hurt me, and they've all this. All right, how many of you can think of a 1, 2, 3? Let me see you raise your hand. You got, come on. Oh, some of you are being real smug. Not me, because I just love Jesus so much. Everybody's an 8, 9, 10. You're lying. So we all got these 1, 2s, and 3s. And what I want you to do is just shout their name out. No, don't do that. Don't do that. So we got these 1, 2s, and 3s. That's who I want you to name it, because in this illustration, that's your Saul. That's your person you used to go. Now, in modern day, Saul would be the equivalent to somebody who we read about in the news that is just horrible. I mean, this guy that Middle Eastern guy that, you know, they, whatever, I can't even pronounce his name. You know who I'm talking about, right? If you watch the news at all, if not, then it doesn't matter to you anyway. But Osama bin Laden and all these people, that's the modern day equivalent to this Saul. Now, you have to get this for this story to really mean something. Is that making sense? Yes or no? Okay, you got to get this. That's that people you go, I don't like them. That's that person that just drives you nuts. That's that person you don't understand. That's that person that has hurt you over and over and hurt other people over and over. That's that person. Saul was 10 times worse than that person. So here's how the story goes. In Acts chapter 9, now God is looking for somebody to start talking and moving through at this particular time. Just the Jews were the ones that were kind of getting it, but he's going, nah, it's time to move on to the Gentiles. Who are we going to get? And God, in his incredible weird wisdom, says, well, we're going to use, you know, Saul. And it's like, okay, what? Is he ever going to use Saul? I mean, there's like all kinds of 8s, 9s, 10s out there, and he picks a 1, 2, 3 that he's going to, you see what I'm saying? And if, for that to really sit in, you have to understand that you would not be here today if it wasn't for that. You, unless you're Jewish, but I don't see any, so you're probably not. So anyway, so you wouldn't be here today. So to put that into context, and so here's the deal. So Saul is on his way to continue, you know, his persecution, and again, you know the story. I'm just going to pull out some things that you probably haven't thought of. And as Jesus approaches him, smacks him in the head, blinds him, lays him down. He goes, you know, who are you? And he says, I'm Jesus, the one you've been persecuting. And he says, well, you know, what do you want me to do? And he said, I want you to get up, and I want you to go to a guy named Judas on Straight Street, ask for a man, and ask for a man from Tarsus named, but anyway, he says, I want you to get up, and I want you to go to Straight Street to Judas's house, and I want you to stay there a little bit. There's going to be a guy come talk to you and blah, blah, and he gives him instructions. So off he goes. The guy's with him, doesn't see anything. All they do is hear it. Now Saul's blinded. They pick him up. They lead him. This, to me, is where it gets very, very interesting. In verse 10, in Damascus, there was a disciple named Ananias. The Lord called to Ananias in a vision. Ananias? Yes, Lord. He said, I want you to go to the house of Judas on Straight Street and ask for a man from Tarsus named Saul, for he's praying, for he is praying. In a vision, he has seen a man named Ananias, that would be you, obviously, come and place his hands on him to restore his sight. Now, we get excited about that. We think, yeah, Jesus did a great, but think about what this means. This is a modern day idiot. This is somebody who is not just a 1, 2, 3 in your book. They are negative 1, 2, 3, 8, 9. Are you getting this? This is somebody who is you don't like, and probably if ever you had reason to, you would not like him. Here's what Ananias says. Lord, I've heard many reports about this man and all the harm he has done to your holy people in Jerusalem. And he has come here with authority from the chief priest to arrest all who call in your name. Now, that's a nice way of saying, what? Do you know who this guy is? There is no, this is like, no, what are you saying? I'll lay hands on him, all right, but it ain't going to be like you want me to be laying hands on him. You see what I'm saying? Now, the Lord says, here's what's interesting. Doesn't even respond to that. Doesn't even answer the question. Doesn't give any kind of disclaimer. Doesn't even give any kind of explanation. He just says, okay, go to this man, my chosen instrument, to proclaim my name to the Gentiles and their kings and the people of Israel. I will show him how much he must suffer for my name. In other words, all you need to do is practice and apply grace, and I will take care of it. You don't need to worry about it. Are you seeing this? This is not an 8, 9, 10. This is not a 4 through 7. This is a 1, 2, 3, or worse. Think about it. Who's your Saul? Who is that person in your life that you don't like? Who's that person in your life that just drives you nuts? And if there were validation for you not liking somebody, it would be that person. Who is that person? So, Ananias goes to the house. And if you're reading the story, as many of you in this room probably have, probably all of you have, and you don't notice the implications of these two most powerful words, what I believe would be in the whole Bible, you're going to gloss right over it. So he goes to the house, and he walks in, and there sits Saul. Now remember, he's blind. So Ananias can do anything he wants to. You see what I'm saying? Wouldn't that be cool if he could, like, but anyway. And he walks in, and he walks over and puts hands on Saul and says, I got you right where I want you now, buddy. You just wait. No. He walks over and he says, do you understand what you really need to do now and everything you've done? Do you understand the harm and the hurt that you've caused people? Do you understand how much I don't like you right now? But God told me to come talk to you, so I'm going to come talk to you. No. He walks over and he puts hands on him. Now listen, two most powerful words. And the first words out of his mouth, Brother Saul. Brother Saul. Are you getting this? Brother Saul. He didn't walk in. It wasn't like, hey, bro. Nope. Brother Saul. Do you get the implication of that? When they said brother, they meant then. We don't mean this now. They meant then. You are part of our family. The first words out of his mouth. Brother Saul. Are you getting it? If you don't pay attention to that and gloss over that, you are missing what I call, what I believe to be two of the most powerful words in the entire Bible. Because in those two words, lies the implication that there's no one in your life that you can look over, that you have to be aware of people as people. Is this making sense? You cannot do that until we learn to practice and apply grace. Now, what in the world does grace really mean in a practical context? What does that mean? And again, before you start thinking, oh, he's saying this because he's in church. That part I said because I'm in church. This part I'm getting ready to tell you, I'm not saying it because I'm in church. This part I'm getting ready to tell you is something I take with me and I talk about in corporate all over the United States whenever this particular subject comes up. How do you practice and apply grace? Let me just give you four things real quick of what grace means in a practical context. Number one, grace has the ability to separate the person from the action. We do not do that well. What we do very well as people is label. We label. Are you seeing this? We do that extremely. We've been practicing labeling since when? Since probably about third grade. We started practicing labeling when we were old enough to recognize human weirdness. My daughter Harper, who goes to kindergarten now, first year in kindergarten, is 5.5 years old. I say half because I'm told to say half. Half, Grandpa, 5.5, Grandpa. Okay. She, to this day, has not started labeling people yet. But there's going to come a day in which suddenly she's going to recognize human weirdness. And I got a feeling it's not too long because she got some freaky weird people in her class. But anyway, that she is now going to start saying, oh, they are a, boom, fill in the blank. Are you seeing this? That's when we start practicing labeling, and it never ends. It only looks a little more sophisticated when you become an adult, but the truth is it never ends. Let me show you this. If Jay lies, we say Jay is a, exactly. Okay, grace comes and goes, nope. Not a liar. He lied, but that's not who he is. Are you seeing this? Grace separates the person from the action. We don't. We just say, oh, he's a liar. Now, that's a dangerous slippery slope because if I label Jay as a liar, who else do I need to label as a liar? Me and who else? Everybody else around. Do you really want to start walking down the road of labeling people? Because once you start handing out labels, you have now created isolation and you can no longer then be effective as a leader or as a Jesus follower. But we label people. Now, let me. Now, I'm very conversational, so I'm used to talking to groups this size and smaller, whatever. So just, it's okay to talk. I know you're probably not used to that in church school. That was kind of weird. He just like talked and expected answers. That's the conversation part of it. But anyway, so who have you done this well with every day of their lives? Intuitively, who do you do that well with? Separate the person from the action. Who? Your kids, not your spouse. They say, nobody ever goes, my spouse. No, you haven't. You're lying if that's the case. You haven't. Because you know that's not true. But your kids intuitively, if somebody calls your kid a liar, how do you respond? It's on. Am I right? You're like, don't call my kid a liar. Especially moms. Moms, dads are a little different. Dads are like, yeah, I know. I don't know what we're going to do about the little liar. But moms are just different. Moms are different. Moms are like, don't call my kid a liar. And you go, but they lied. And the mom goes, I know, but don't call him a liar. It's like, that makes no sense at all. It's like, and hair stands out on end, and fangs appear, and eyes get red, and she's getting ready to go Jason Bourne on somebody right now. You know what I'm saying? Don't call my kid a liar. And you say, but they lied. And you say, I know they lied. And the more, so this was like what happened for me, like that kid, the more she protects him, the more in trouble he is when she gets home. You know what I mean? It's like, so at some point you go, Mom, it's okay. Don't worry. But shut up. I'll just deal with you when you get home. But you're protecting that child from the reputation of liar because you're separating the person from the action. You know what Ananias did? That's exactly what he did. He separated the person from the action. He no longer saw Saul as Saul. He now saw him as something completely different. That is grace. Now, here's one reason why you can do that. This is number two. Grace has the ability to look at the what if and not the what is. Again, something we don't do very well at all. Think about this out loud. Just answer this yes or no. Do you believe people can change? Okay, then if you believe people can change, then we have no right to label people by something stupid that they've done. Because everybody in this room has done something stupid, and everybody in this room has changed. You are probably not the same person, hopefully you are not the same person now that you were even 1 year, 2 year, or 10 years ago. Am I right? Yes or no? How many of you ever raised a 13-year-old? Let me see you raise your hand. All right. Now, how many of you ever been 13? Let me see you raise your hand. All right. Just want to make sure we cover everybody. Now listen to me. Do you ever look at a 13-year-old and go, well, that's just the way they're going to be? No. How old are you, man? 14? Dude, you ain't going to stay that way. Is your mom and dad here? Where are they at? Yeah, mom? Yeah, you don't look at this kid. What's your name? What? Stephen? I'm Stephen. That's weird, huh? You look at Stephen and go, well, that's just the way he's going to be. No, because if that's the way he's going to be in another 14, no offense or anything, you don't understand, right? But in another 14 years, the world's going to be a mess. That ain't the way. He's not as good as he's going to get right now. You see what I'm saying? You look at the what if and not the what is. That's what great teachers do. They teach to the adult that the child is going to be, not to the child that he is right now. But what can he be? This is exactly what Ananias did when he looked at Saul and he went, brother Saul. He's not looking at what is anymore. He's looking at what can be. Because I don't believe that all the dialogue is written in Acts 9. I think there's got to be more dialogue than that. It ain't like anybody's going to go, okay, I'll go. You're going to argue. How many of you ever argue with God? Okay. How many of you think that's a sin? Some of you are like, not me, because he is always God. Well, then you are a freak. But anyway, so... You just go, no, I don't think that. But he saw what can be. What can be. That's grace. Grace sees what can be, not what is right now. Making sense? Number three, this is big. Grace always, always holds you accountable. It's very, very important for you to get. Grace always, always, always holds you accountable. But it also always makes you want to do better. Had Ananias have walked in and immediately begin to correct Saul, no go. Had he have walked in and immediately reminded Saul of every idiotic thing he'd ever done, no go. He didn't. Now, grace holds you accountable. Grace looks at somebody and goes, you need to stop lying. It's not acceptable here. It's against what you do for your children, right? You need to stop being lazy. You need to get your stuff done. You need to get up. You need to get going. So if you're a leader and you oversee people in the workplace, and especially if you're a Jesus follower, you hold them accountable. But when you hold them accountable, you do it from an avenue of grace, and it always makes somebody want to do better. Let me prove this to you. Now, again, you got to talk out loud. All right, you ready? If you're ready to play, say, I'm ready. Some of you aren't there yet. This is church. This is A. A is you did everything right and it turned out great and they love you. This is B. B is you totally screwed it up. You made a mess of it. You made all kinds of stupid mistakes and they love you anyway. Now, answer out loud. Which one, A or B, which one makes you feel the most loved? Say it out loud, A or B. And then when they love you anyway, what does that make you want to do? Exactly. But when they don't, and you get pounded for the mistakes, or you get pounded for everything you've ever done, what does that make you want to do? Isolate, shut off, quit, run, nothing. And grace comes in and goes, look, you screwed it up, don't do it again, but you're going to be okay. Is there anybody in this room that God has not done that for over and over and over and over again? Are you seeing it? That's how you practically apply grace. Number four, this is probably my favorite. Grace has the ability to level the playing field. Levels the playing field. In other words, grace is that one common denominator that holds us together as a team, as a church, as an organization, wherever you are. Grace levels the playing field. How many of you in here has ever done or said something stupid that has hurt somebody else? I'm going to see you raise your hand. Okay, now, here's the interesting question. How many of you in here are ever going to say something stupid and hurt somebody else ever again? You know you are, and they know you are. And that's not a fun thing to raise your hand when you're sitting next to your spouse going, yeah, I'm going to hurt you. You're like, now, are you going to do it on purpose? Hopefully not. But you've done it. How many of you in here want to be known and labeled by your biggest personal screw-up ever? Anybody? No. Nobody does. How many of you even want to tell anybody about your biggest personal... No, if you're like me, I've hired welders to weld to shut these closet doors. They ain't coming open for you or anybody else. You see what I'm saying? Here's the deal. To not want to be known by your biggest personal screw-up, but yet to label others by theirs is the height of arrogance. You know why? You know why the church today, Jesus followers today, catch so much criticism? For that very reason. Because we're incredibly judgmental. Although we want grace and show up here by grace, in no way, shape, form, or fashion do we understand how to apply it in an everyday life context. Let me tell you what we're good at. It's what I learned growing up in church. We are great at holiness. We are horrible at grace. And when you begin to apply grace in everyday practical context, it literally changes the trajectory of every relationship you have and every relationship you're going to have. It radically changes the trajectory of your leadership and of your influence with everybody around you. There's nobody in here who wants to be known by your biggest personal screw-up, including me, and that's not at all the way God labels me. Are you seeing this? It's grace. So when Ananias walked in, he put his hands on Saul, and he said, Brother Saul, think about the implications of what Brother Saul really, really means. And history was literally changed from that point forward. Is that making sense? Let's pray. Lord, thank you for the opportunity of being here this morning. This is incredible. I love this. And I just pray that you would be with every one of us, Lord. Help us to understand. Help us to get it. Help us to grab onto it, not just fun words we talked about for a day, Lord, but something that we can take with us to help us sink into our hearts, to make us better people, make us better leaders, make us better influencers for you. And I pray that you'd help that person, Lord, that one, two, and three, that person that just drives us nuts, help us to see them differently when we see them the next time we see them, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you, Steve.